Greetings, this is Nigeria Anderson, and I have Gabriella Douglas on the line with me. And she's a set designer, and we're going to talk about some of the work that she's done, mostly those great accomplishments. Now, how did you transition from being an architect to a set designer?
Well, I did my undergrad and my master's in architecture. I graduated from my master's back in 2017, and I found that having worked several years in architecture firms, that, you know, I worked on condos or apartment buildings or really large factories like Honda or Acura, I found that I fell out of love with architecture and the bureaucracy and the amount of time wasted and the unappreciation for the designer. Ooh. But I didn't ever fall out of love with design.
Right.
I've always been a movie buff. I've always loved film and television, and I've always noticed the power of production design, how an audience can be carried through a story purely by the inanimate objects and not by the script or by the actor's portrayal of their character. And so in talking to a few people in my discipline, I was able to find that career in production design and understand that quite a number of architects have made the lateral move to production design. And it's been very successful for them. So I, you know, spoke to the right people and was able to make the right connections. And from I think it was 2 weeks after I graduated from my master's, I was working on my very first film as a set designer. And that was Chaos Walking.
Okay. Can you tell us in lame terms what's a set designer? How do you get the concept to development?
Absolutely. So a set designer is an individual who works with either people or different mediums. So I work with my production designer, or I work with the script or script developers, and I take information from the character, the era, the budget, the kind of like design style that we're working with, and I create the spaces in which we film.
Okay.
So, for example, if there was a character in the script, say it was a 14-year-old girl, you know, her name's Sarah. She's very interested in these kinds of bands. This is her parents' socioeconomic background. This is where she lives in the country. You know, you'll do research into that character, and from then you'll develop a space where you interpret she would live.
Oh, okay.
So I would make the room, you know, you would make the room, say, 8 feet by 6 feet or whatever is appropriate for that space. And and then you would, you know, make the space logical to what would actually be built in that, you know, region of the country. It's, you know, her bedroom would be significantly different if her parents lived in New York versus if her parents lived in Nevada. You know, like her ceiling heights would be different. The decor in her room would be different depending on her age and her interests. So the role of a set designer is to allow the audience to understand this character and this storyline through space. So, that's my job.
Okay. So like if she liked a band, there would be you're responsible for putting all those posters on a wall.
I personally wouldn't be responsible. That would be the graphic designer. But I would be responsible in indicating that I want a poster on that wall and that I want the band to be, you know, Spice Girls or whoever. It doesn't necessarily matter. But I would say, you know, this character, Sarah, she's going to have a poster on this wall here. She's going to have a poster of Leonardo DiCaprio here. We're going to give her, an idea that she's, you know, around puberty a little bit, you know, going to puberty. So these are the things that's going to be around her wall. And then the graphics people are the ones who specifically apply those artwork.
Okay. So how is digital now playing a role in what you do?
It's enormously involved. Everything I do is on the computer.
Okay.
So being that my background is architecture, I draw. I make the construction drawings, any concept 3D models.
Right, okay.
Usually, in the design process, you'll begin with a 3D model, and that'll simply be, you know, masses and voids for the director or whomever you're pitching this idea to. They need to just understand spatially how they can move through this set. And logistically, how can they fit cameras and where can they shoot from?
Okay.
And then from there, once the idea evolves, that's when you begin creating actual architectural drawings. So what's the door detail? What's the window detail?
Right.
What's the ceiling height? You know, very in-depth pieces like that. But it always starts out as massing models on the computer, 3D models that you can orbit around.
Right.
And you can, you know, place a camera here, place a view here. And most people who aren't literate in architectural drawings respond very well to 3D models because it makes more sense to their brain.
Okay. Now, the Apple TV show C is one of my favorites, and that has a lot of design in it. What was it like working on that?
Yeah, I'm so happy you bring that up because that was probably my favorite show to work on for a number of reasons. Primary reason, the people I got to work with on that show were some of the most wonderful, extremely talented, extremely generous people that I still speak to this day. Our production designer for season one, Caroline Hanaya, she didn't move on to season three, but she brought in such a positive, respectful, kind attitude to the workplace that I thought just trickled down to everybody and made it so that people wanted to come to work. There were no bad apples. There were no crappy attitudes. Everybody came in and wanted to learn and bring the best out of everyone. So that for that reason alone, I would say that that was the best show I worked on.
Okay.
But beyond that, we had so much money on that show because it's Apple and they just are, you know, rolling in dough, that we were able to do things and have conversations about certain sets that wouldn't even be a dream on shows that had perhaps, you know, significantly less money. So I found out for that show, we got to do some really fantastical things that were just a total joy. But I would say the premise of the show is that it takes place 600 years in the future, where the world as we know it has become a dystopia where all humanity has lost their ability to see. So any knowledge or information that would have been passed down through books have rendered obsolete because nobody can read. And also, you know, electricity is gone, so it's not like you could watch a YouTube video or anything like that. So it makes it incredibly fun for a set designer because items that would have a primary use need to be reimagined because they're going to be used by someone who couldn't have possibly known the primary use. So we have, you know, so many things on set that have been, you know, Frankenstein into something else or have been completely reimagined and somehow still work in that space. But it's so, you know, one example is we had to build a goat pen in what would become this town, but originally was Penn State University. And the idea was, this is an idea Caroline and I were bouncing around, but Caroline said, if there was an apocalypse at a university, what would you find an abundance of that would be able to last for 600 years?
Wow.
And we thought about it and thought about it, and finally we came to the conclusion, bicycles. The aluminum or metal frame, you know, metal would have been rusted quite a bit, but the aluminum would have survived. The rubber would be completely gone, but the aluminum probably would have survived. And so what we did is we actually cladded these aluminum frames for these bicycles all over this metal fence and used that as the fencing for the goat pen. And it turned out beautifully. I'm very, very happy with how it aged and how, kind of how rad it looked. It looked so appropriate because of, you know, the background knowledge of the space. But yeah, that one was well received because it was appropriate. You know, school's gonna have thousands of bicycles,
right?
So those would have lasted.
Have you worked, or would you be interested in working on a Marvel film?
Great question. Yes, I would love to work on a Marvel show. I have a few friends who've worked on them in the past, and I can say that they have a lot of money. And as a set designer, money is great because there's so many things that you don't have to relinquish as a set designer to the green screen. or to the post-production.
Right.
Money means you can do things in real time and have real explosions, real, you know, towers, real spaces that you think, well, that's for sure done CGI. It's not. We built it because we had the money for it.
Mm.
And so that allows the designer, myself, to be more in control of the design and execution of the set, as opposed to if you just make it all green screen, I relinquish my power to the post-production crew. And they are the ones who do all the design. Nothing against those individuals. It's just I'm the designer and I want control over it.
Right.
I've worked on Star Trek Discovery. Shows like that have enormous canons. But their backstory and all the stories that come tangentially from, you know, the one you're working on are so enriched and in-depth that it is problematic if you wish to step outside the line, because so many people know the backstory. They know the canon.
Right.
That it can sometimes feel like such a privilege to work on such an iconic show. But on the other hand, it can feel very, very handicapping when you can only color between certain lines because of a precedence of debate.
Now, set designer, is that a competitive field? Like, how do you find work?
Yes, I would say it is a competitive field, but our industry is entirely reputation-based.
We do
have a union, and within that union, we have, you know, a database where you can input your information and others and employers, would be the art director in this instance, would input their information. And we have these hot lists that come out every week that indicate who's hiring and when they're going to begin and what tier they are. So it gives you an idea of the salary that you'd be making,
right,
or the rate, I should say. So that information is available to anybody who is in the union. Any art director will tell you that if they see a name come across the street, if they get an email from somebody saying, "Hi, my name's Gabriella Douglas. I'm available. I am a set designer. Please let me know if you're interested and we can talk further." Okay. They're not going to respond to that email until they contact their, you know, their best friend who's also art directors or their mentors and say, "Hey, Gabriella Douglas, have you ever worked with her?"
Oh, okay.
So, you know, that's the kind of reputation. They'll look at my CV and see, oh, she's worked with this person, this person, this person. Okay, I know that person. I'll give them a call and say, "Hey, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down. Should I hire this person? What's their competence level? Can, you know, this is the show that I'm going to be working on. Mid-century modern era. You know, this is our budget. Can she handle something like that?" And that's where that reputation is so important, because every day is a job interview for your next show.
Right.
So you really have to come in every day. Obviously, you know, you're a human being. You're going to have crappy days. But
you have
to treat every day as a job interview for your next show, because everybody knows everybody.
Oh.
And it is really not that big of a pool.
Right.
So your best work needs to shine through.
Okay.
As much as you possibly can.
Now, a set designer takes a lot of time. How do you meet your deadlines? And how do you relax? Like, do you see visions in your head when you sleep? Like, oh yeah, that would be great. And then jumping up and getting your drawing pad and start drawing in the middle of the night. Or what's that like for you?
That's a great question. So we work legally. Our union hours are from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday to Friday.
Okay.
I typically come in between 7:15 and 7:30 because I'll make my breakfast in the office, but I also like going into the carpenter's spaces and see what they're working on and see if I can answer any questions that they may have on stuff that I've submitted.
Okay.
But 12-hour days are pretty ironclad. If ever there was an instance that I needed to work overtime, which is not uncommon, there would need production approval, because fortunately in this field we do get paid overtime.
Mm-hmm.
There's no free work. If I'm in the office past 8 o'clock, I have to get paid for that by union regulation, which I very much appreciate, because I've worked on jobs, case in point, architecture, you do not get paid overtime.
Oh, wow.
So, Yeah, and architects will be the first to tell you that they absolutely do work 12-hour days, but they'll only get paid for 8. So that was another, to harp back to our previous conversation, that was another reason why I left. I thought architecture students and architects have comparable levels of education to that of a lawyer.
Right.
You know, we have to go through the same level of standardized testing, same number of years in school, comparable tuition fees. But after your second year as a lawyer, you should be making somewhere around 6 figures.
Right.
Whereas as an architect, you'll make maybe 60,000.
Okay.
And that's, to me, you know, take it for what you will, I value my income enormously.
Right.
Because to me, it is a direct correlation to my self-worth in this industry.
Right.
So I didn't appreciate how little people were getting paid as architects, with reference to how much they were working and how much legal liability architects take on a project. 12-hour days are very long days. They are taxing, but shows typically last anywhere from 6 to 12 months, and they're all contract-based. So you can sign on for a show for 6 months, 10 months, however long it is, and then you can, if you're financially stable enough, you can take however long you want until your next show.
Oh, okay.
So between shows, I take anywhere from a month to 2 months off.
Oh, nice.
And I don't work at all. And I will go on a trip if it's, you know, COVID obviously has put a wrench in it. But prior to COVID, between Star Trek and Mrs. America, I took 2 months off and I backpacked across Australia. And then I spent a month backpacking across New Zealand. And that, you know, that'll help you reset for sure.
Right, right.
I try to maintain a healthy lifestyle as best I can while I'm working on a show.
Okay.
It's tough because you're so tired at the end of the day. You don't necessarily want to go to the gym or go do a workout.
Right,
but,
right.
It, you know, I have ambitions of being in this career for a very long time, and I don't want to stop at 60 because I have heart problems.
Right, gotcha.
You know, just because my body can't handle it anymore. So
wow.
I try to, you know, I'm keto, so I don't eat any carbs or any sugar, which definitely helps me stay motivated during the course of the day. I don't have any caffeine either.
Okay.
I know how this sounds on the outside. I probably sound crazy.
No, but it's what you do.
Yeah, I don't. I try not to consume anything that gives you a spike and then a major crash.
Right.
Because I find that you get addicted to those kind of things. I just try to eat and maintain a lifestyle that's even keel as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm much more sustainable during the course of a show.
Okay.
In my experience, the people who carb load and who drink loads of caffeine and just tons of sugar, you'll find that at the beginning of the show, they had a ton of energy. And at the end, they are completely burnt out. They've gained 15 pounds. They've neglected so many avenues of their lives. And I'm not, you know, bashing
it. Right. Yeah, no. You're helping somebody.
I've just found that that's not the path I want to go down. And I can see how I can avoid it. So I definitely take my diet and my health very, very high esteem.
Now, finally, you're working on Chucky season 2. Let's talk about that and what's the demand and what's fun about it.
It's extremely fun. I have never worked on a horror before.
Oh, okay.
And it's been so eye-opening. I didn't grow up a big horror person. I'm a big scaredy cat. So there's an entire genre that I genuinely know nothing about by design.
Right.
But having worked on the show, there's so much appreciation for set design because, you know, you might get those jump scares in certain scenes, but you'll get that, you know, the camera will be walking through this corridor and it's so dimly lit, but it gives you this eerie, ghostly feeling and literally nothing has happened. You know, it's just a camera moving through a space, but because
right.
of the way it's lit, because of the way it's painted, because of the ceiling height, because of the light coming in, you get, this audience gets this feeling of, okay, like, something's about to go down.
Right.
And that's purely, you know, theater. That's production design. That's lighting. That's scenic. And I think what I've come to realize is that horror has just mastered displaying the importance of production design. I've come to really, really appreciate you know, the checkered flooring, you know, the black and white flooring is so iconic because blood looks great on it. And, I never really noticed that until I, you know, speaking to other people, I'm like, why do we have so many black and white floors?
Right, right.
They're like, no, just wait. It'll look cool.
Oh, okay.
And then you see it and you're like, oh, wow, you're totally right. It does look cool. these beautiful, beautiful tall windows. I can't talk about this at
Right. No, I understand.
You know, I can say we have, you know, this is neither here nor there, but we have these fantastic windows and in particular sets that really just make the space terrifying.
Mm.
And the lighting and just the ambiance in general, I find that, like I said, like I horror does it like nobody else.
Right.
And it really is kind of, it's such an awesome dance between production design and filming when it comes to horror, because, you know, they're just trying to figure out what's the gnarliest way someone can die here, or how can we make this space even scarier? And it's just so much fun.
Right.
It's really fun.
Right. Now, I have a film background. So you mentioned you're a movie buff. So do you watch films and be like, huh, they messed up right there?
Yes.
I thought I was the only one.
Yeah. No, I think that's hilarious. And my roommate, she and I are both set designers. And we have at times, you know, after a bottle of wine, sitting and watching a show,
right.
And then we just rip into it because we're like, oh my gosh, you can see the foam.
Right,
you know, like,
right.
We were watching season one of, you know what, I shouldn't say which show.
Yeah, don't say the show.
We were watching this one show.
Uh-huh.
No, I won't say the show, but we were watching season one of this particular show, and these characters run into the space, and it's for sure, like, 2 a.m. Like, it's supposed to be pitch blackout.
Right.
And then you go into another room, and it is broad daylight. And then you go back to this original room, and it's dark. And we both look at each other, like, well, someone dropped the ball. Like,
right.
Not to, you know, bash anybody who doesn't work in the industry, but it was so plainly obvious that you're like, okay, well, that's a goof. But yeah, and that's the thing, like productions that I find that really knock it out of the park,
mm-hmm.
I might take a moment just to myself and think like, oh, wow, that's awesome.
Right.
But I really will lose myself in it. I won't necessarily be thinking where the camera is,
right,
or where like a boom mic operator is in this instance, or if that's a location versus a set, if that's a wall plug versus, you know, completely on stage. I try to turn my brain off when I'm really enjoying a film or a show, because I want to get lost in it. But sometimes you'll watch stuff that isn't so hot, and you'll think, oh, okay, that's
Well, I thank you so much for sharing with us. You've worked on so many wonderful projects and, you know, keep going. You know, we need women in this genre doing their thing. So salute to you and keep your standard. And as we say, once a key player, always a key player. So as you continue to grow and maybe, you know, change genre, just give us a call back. We'll love to catch up with you.
Oh, thank you, Nigeria. Thank you so much for your time and I appreciate talking to you, and I'd love to keep in touch. It's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Gabriella.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely day.
All right, you too.